AT&T connects an ode to podcast. Connect the alarm, change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze, 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower, lather up with the news, sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work and traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories, change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
You know you've got a comeback in you. When you take the next step, you're going to make it count. For your career, for your family, for your life. You can earn a degree you're proud of with Purdue Global. Purdue Global is backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected and innovative public universities. This is your chance. This is your opportunity. This is your comeback. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
LASIK, LASIK.com.
Have a ton of questions about LASIK? You're not alone. That's why we created LASIK.com, one place where you can go to find every answer to every question on your mind. Like, how much does LASIK cost? How long does recovery take? How do I find a doctor? If you've been thinking about LASIK, go to LASIK.com now. Yeah, LASIK.com. Easy to remember, so you know where to start.
LASIK, LASIK.com.
Yep, yep, Ghetto Boys is back and reloaded. All in your mouth, yeah, now deep-throated. This is for the streets, the real, the railroaded. The disenfranchised, the truth, the scapegoated.
And they know it, we speak the truth, so they quote it. Cause we wrote it, the north, south, the east coast. It's the GB knocking, we keeping your head bobbing. It ain't no stopping.
And once the beat drops in, violins, the system is so corrupt. They throw the rock out their hands and then blame it on us. It's GB. Don't get it twisted. I'm cold and we ain't dancing for no buttermilk biscuits.
It's Willie D, y'all. Scarface is in the building. Collectively, we are the Ghetto Boys.
Reloaded.
Reloaded with another episode of information and instructions to help you navigate through this wild, crazy, beautiful world. In the studio, Reggie Jackson. Hey, fam, we're talking living legend. We're talking iconic. We're talking, you know, even greater than his baseball accolades, his accolades as a human being, Reggie Johnson. Well, you know what? I knew I was going to do that. You know, Reggie Johnson. Are you familiar with Reggie Johnson, the boxer? Mm-mm. Reggie Johnson is a personal friend of mine. So I'm always saying his name. And I knew, I was like, I'm going to mess up at least once saying, mixing your name up with Reggie's name. But Reggie Jackson is in the building, fam. I just want to run down some of the accolades real quick. This is important. Just to establish, you know, why we're having this conversation in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
5-time World Series champion, 2-time World Series MVP, 2-time Silver Slugger Award winner, 4-time AL Home Run King. 1973, he was the MVP of the league. And in 1993, he was inducted into the Baseball Hall of Fame.
Oh, he bad.
And, you know, I was thinking about all of these accomplishments of yours. Do you, you know, ever have people come up to you and talk about your stats and your records and you like, man, what are you talking about? Like, do you keep up with that stuff?
Well, if I would be saying that to someone, I have that happen a lot, but I wouldn't say to them, do you keep up with that stuff? Mm-hmm. I would be grateful and you know, thank them for being a fan, shake their hand and say thank you very much. If they didn't want anything else, I'd just say thank you.
Right.
And be honored.
Right. I was looking at your DOB. You was born in 1946. You just celebrated a birthday. Did you actually celebrate? Did you do anything special?
I was with my lady, my companion, for 30 years.
Right.
And we flew to Las Vegas to have a business lunch. with a group of Honda guys that there was a big event there. So we flew to Houston, and on the way we stopped in Las Vegas for a few hours, and we came down here and had dinner with friends for my birthday.
Right.
Kyle, did I have dinner with you on my birthday? Yeah, I came and I had dinner at the Patente in
great restaurant,
fantastic
downtown Houston.
Yeah, for my birthday.
Right, right.
Well, happy belated.
Happy belated. I was looking at you're 76 years old. I'm 55, so another 20 years I'll be your age, right? Your current age. and I'm thinking, like, you know, oftentimes people will say, well, what would the older you tell the younger you? I want to know, what would the older you today tell a 56-year-old Reggie Jackson?
56-year-old. It's not a young man. You know, he was, and I wouldn't even say he was middle-aged. But, you know, at 56, you should be established. You should own a home. And you should be doing things that you love and enjoy. Not everyone is afforded that. That's a luxury. Most people, my father at the age of 56, had to support 6, 7, 8, 9 kids. You know, he had 6 at home, and then he had another 3 or 4 of, you know, outside that he had to support. So, and he worked until he was in his 70s to keep hustling in order to make life for himself. And so, you know, it's a different world for an African American. So I would tell you things differently than I would tell a white American, because the opportunities are different for each, even in today's world. So that makes a difference. You know, and trying to pass on what would be coming up in your life and what you should pay attention to really is, where is your family? Where are your children? Who is your mate? And what do you plan on doing with the rest of your life at 56? You're 55. You should be on a path of spending time and building your relationships and solidifying your relationships with your immediate family, children, wife, brothers, sisters. At 56, both my parents were alive.
Oh, wow.
So that's 20 years ago. My mother died in 2000, so she, you know, just recently passed. I was late, early 50s. And my dad passed when I was 47. But my dad had me when he was late, because he passed at 90. So I was fortunate to have, we were great friends. My dad got to see me play baseball. He was in the stadium the night I hit 3 home runs.
1977.
Yes. When I made it in the big leagues and made it in professional sports, my dad was young enough to receive the rewards of the money that I earned. And so I shared with my 2 parents, helped all brothers and sisters, but I shared with my parents. I didn't want them to have a rough life at all anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was very close to family. I became the nurturer of my mom and dad at probably 45 or 50. And I helped them when I was in my 20s financially.
Mm-hmm.
And that was important for me. And as a colored Negro, African American, I was all those things. Negra, you know, you know, you were all those things as you were coming along in my mm-hmm. era. You know, you made sure that you took care of your folks. And so, and I enjoyed it, and I was proud of it. And I enjoyed my parents being comfortable. So, at the age of in my 50s, I was working and gathering and still building the blocks of life. I was still building my village, if you will, garnering and gathering assets to be able to take care of and provide for my family around me.
Did you feel any panic?
Panic?
Yeah, panic as far as like a sense of urgency. Let me get this right before.
No.
Yeah.
No, no. I went about it in a daily way. I had conversations with God all the time. Hmm. I remember being in Yankee Stadium, getting booed by the crowd. I had a tough time there in the early years, being black, being a Yankee, wearing the pinstripes. And I wasn't subservient as a colored man. I considered myself equal. I demanded dignity. And so I had what was interpreted as an arrogance. And I was arrogant because I was constantly demeaned as a colored, and so Negro. So I carried a chip on my shoulder for a long time, and got to the point where when I would even see videos, I didn't really like myself, but I was always defending who I was as a man. You know, you're glad you're here with the Yankees. You're lucky you're here with the Yankees. And I used to go like, you're right, but you're way more glad I'm here than me glad I'm here. You're glad I'm here. And so I took it that way all the time, of rather kowtowing to someone. I wanted to be on equal ground and be recognized for the man I was, not the strongest coon in the room, or the most powerful, or the most talented. Athletes and African American athletes were always considered a tremendous, what an unbelievable talent. And the white athlete was a coach on the field, a manager on the floor. You know, great understanding of the game, could see great vision, where the athlete, and I've had conversations with Michael just a couple of months ago in Florida, where he said, gosh, Reggie, you know, sometimes I still get upset with people thinking that I didn't work on my skills. And I just walked in the gym. Game started at 8 o'clock. I rolled in at 6:30, got dressed, and went out and played. And he said, I know you understand that it took work to get to where I got to, where my good fortune brought me to where I am today. I worked at it.
That's Michael Jordan.
Yes. Yeah. Who is at least in the paragraph of greatest athlete, the greatest basketball player. He's in the last sentence. It's either him or someone else that is the greatest, that is the real GOAT. You know, when you hang around with him, then you got a couple of GOATs in the room with me and him or whomever. But when it gets down to the end, the last few, Jackie Robinson, Hank Aaron, Willie Mays, Jimmy Brown, Michael Jordan, Will Chamberlain, Bill Russell, there's a lot of cats. Tiger, there's a lot of cats in there. But, Jordan and the 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 guys you mentioned there in the last paragraph. A couple of them in the last sentence.
When you get that many goats in one room, now it becomes a matter of subjectiveness, right? It's
whomever you pick.
Right.
And those guys, I knew them all. None of them have any preference of being the guy. they're comfortable and grateful to be in the paragraph. You know, and talking to Michael the last time, it was probably the best conversation I've ever had with him. He said, "Reggie, gosh, I never thought I would be where I am today for my product and my commercialism that has turned into the business that I've got. I never dreamed it'd be like this." He said, "I want to enjoy it and share it with my family." What better words could you say? You know,
were there any like similar opportunities for endorsement deals in your heyday?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I made more money off the field than I made on. I made more money in endorsements. I had a deal with Panasonic that paid me $250,000 a year for 20 years.
Nice. Nicely done.
20 years. When I left them, I was with them for about 10 or 11 years, and they paid me for the next 8 for an appreciation of helping their brand when I was in New York. We had a couple signs there, the Lincoln Tunnel, the most popular sign in the world at the time, like having something on 42nd Street, that you had to go by that sign to get in and out of the city. And we had it for like 10 years, and I only played there for 5. But Panasonic rewarded me very comfortably for that.
I wish I'd have known that story. I would have bought more Panasonic products.
It was called Reggie Vision.
Yeah. Reggie Vision?
It was called Reggie Vision.
Yeah. Did you do any Coca-Cola, Sprite, or
no,
Pepsi, Gatorade?
No, there were no drinks like that. You know, it was on the cover of Wheaties or the box. And then I did some Fabergé stuff. You know, the group Fabergé with Joe Namath.
Oh, right. Lord.
And you know, Puma Shoes was my brand for the longest time. And
they paid you.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I did a lot of work for ABC Television. I did several World Series as an announcer when I was a player.
Right. I saw some of that. You have often heard the old adage, you know, all money ain't good money. Have there been opportunities that was presented to you and you was like, that's not consistent with my brand. I don't want the money. I don't care how much money you guys are offering me. I'm not going to endorse that product.
I would say that has happened to me, but I never really was approached by a brand I didn't want to be associated with. You know, I was honored to do the Panasonic television thing. And you know, as a young kid, I watched an Admiral TV. I watched an RCA. I watched a Philco. I watched them old raggedy ones that, you know, you couldn't afford, that you mm-hmm. could afford. And so when Panasonic came along, it was an honor. It was turned down by Bill Cosby. And, there was a woman, she did a lot of horror movies. I can't remember. She was the daughter of Curtis, Jamie Lee
Curtis.
Yeah, she had a chance to do it. And they Panasonic was offering them, you know, $400,000 a year, and it was going to turn into $1 million a year for them. And Bill Cosby didn't want it, you know, unless it was 7 figures. And I said to my agent said, they're offering $250,000 a year, Reggie, for 3 years with an evergreen, which means after the third year, after the first year, it extended a third year. And then after that year, you got another third year. So it was green for 3 years. So when you got terminated, you had 3 years left. I said, do me a favor. Don't send it to me. Sign my name and drive it over to Jersey. Hmm.
Right.
I said, go get that money and get that deal and get it done. You don't need to send it to me.
Let's go back to Win Coat. Let's go back to Abington Township. Let's go back to Montgomery County, Pennsylvania, where it all started for you. How was it like growing up out there?
You know, we had 6 children at home with the parents. And my parents divorced when I was 6. My dad took 3. My mom took 3. And I don't know, they ever got a divorce and never remarried, neither. But, you know, my dad was a hard worker. My mother was a government employee. She was a hard worker. She moved to Philadelphia. We lived in Wincote, which was just on the outskirts of Philadelphia, suburb. And my dad worked during the day, and he came home at night and cooked for the three children. My once oldest sister left, and my brother went to the service, and I was really alone for a while. One of my other brothers came and lived with us, got me through high school. But it was basically, you know, we had heat in the house. We didn't have a lot of extra food. My dad bought food home from work every day because he owned his own business as a tailor and dry cleaner. You know, but we ate every day. A lot of times we had to wait till my dad got home until we could put heat in the house, because we had to go buy 5 gallons of kerosene to get the heat turned on, and because it would run all night. But, you know, I had a tough home life, went to school every day, never really took any days off because you could get meals, you could eat at school. And I was always on a sports team, so you showered at school a lot. Mm-hmm. Every day you could shower there. Because at home, without heat in the house in the morning, it was too cold. There was no hot water, you know, so we had to heat water to wash up in the morning.
Yeah, I can relate to going to school to eat that meal, man, because if I didn't go to school, I probably would not eat some days.
Yeah.
Yeah, I definitely can relate to that. You mentioned your brother helped you out, helped you get through school. How so?
You know, he helped me dress and wear the right clothes.
Right.
Things like that. And but we, you know, went to the same school for a while, but he left and then went to live with my mom. Yeah. You know, we had a brothers and the sisters and the family kids, we did stick together and check in on each other.
Yeah. And you were a four-sport athlete. You played baseball, basketball, football, and what was the other
one? Ran some track.
And you ran track, yeah, it was track and field. How did you gravitate towards baseball? Like, and how did you get started with baseball, and how did you figure out, like, out of all of these sports, I'm going to take my chances with baseball?
Well, really, we had the neighborhood baseball field in our backyard. It wasn't that big, but, you know, you could, you know, have 4 or 5 guys on a team and play a game of baseball in the backyard. My father worked inside in his business. He'd come out and check on us from time to time. But the neighborhood games were a lot of times in our backyard.
That's hella convenient.
I had to hit right-handed a lot of times, because if I hit left-handed and hit the ball, though, maybe 200 feet, then it would go in the neighbor's yard and in the garden, and they'd either keep the ball or yell at you because going in and chasing the ball, stamping on their plants or, you know, garden or whatever. You could play sports in high school, junior high as well. But if you weren't on the first team, dad wasn't interested in building your social skills. You had to come home and work if you weren't on the first string. So if you were sitting on the bench, you quit the team and brought you a butt on, worked and helped.
Yeah.
You know, so, but I made all the first string baseball, basketball, football, ran track, during the baseball season. And I went to college, at Arizona State University. I was a much better football player. I had size and speed. I was 185 pounder in high school as a halfback, and safety. And then at Arizona State, I got to about 197 to 203, ran a 4.5 40, had size.
That's speed.
And I was really looking to play pro football. I had played baseball and I loved baseball. I was probably the number one player in the area in Pennsylvania, out in Philadelphia and all around. But I had a, you know, I was with a single parent and, a lot of racism in my neighborhood, as a black kid. And I was angry and tough, from the racial slurs and the racial stuff that you dealt with all the time. So I had an attitude and I was physical. You know, if somebody would call you a nigger, then you gonna whip you. I gotta beat your ass. You know, I would beat a kid up and then take him to the principal's office.
You would take him to the principal's office.
I'd carry him to the principal's office and say I just beat him up because he called me a nigger.
Yeah.
Ghetto Boys Reloaded Podcast. We'll be right back after the break.
AT&T connects an ode to podcast. Connect the alarm, change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze, 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower, lather up with the news, sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work and traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories, change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
This is Amy Brown from Four Things with Amy Brown. Today, healthier is happening at CVS Health in more ways than you've ever seen. It's wellness destinations for seniors, including select locations with Oak Street Health and CVS Pharmacy. It's doctors, nurses, pharmacists, and everyone in between offering quality care and support virtually, in person, and on the phone. It's in-home evaluations through Signify Health and meeting mental health needs through Aetna. And those are just a few of the ways that healthier is happening. To see more, visit cvshealth.com/healthierhappenstogether. CVS Pharmacy, Oak Street Health, CVS Specialty, Signify Health, and Aetna are part of CVS Health. Eligibility and services vary by location and individual.
LASIK. LASIK.com.
Have you been thinking about LASIK but not sure if you're a candidate? Just go to LASIK.com/quiz and take our free candidacy quiz. In just a few minutes, you'll know if LASIK is likely right for you. And if it is, we'll connect you with experienced LASIK doctors in your area. Start your journey towards 20/20 vision. Take our free candidacy quiz at LASIK.com/quiz. Yeah, LASIK.com. Easy to remember, so you know where to start.
LASIK. LASIK.com.
You played for Kansas City Athletics, Oakland Athletics. You played for the California Angels. You played for Baltimore Orioles. You played for New York Yankees. That's a lot of moving around. You know, I often wonder, like, when baseball players, football players, basketball players, when they get relocated a lot, when they get traded and stuff like that, you know, what kind of impact that has on your family?
Well, I was married for a couple of years with the Oakland A's, and so my tenure with the A's was 8 seasons. I was married and I was single, married and single again in those 8 years. I was only married for about 4 years. I really wasn't ready to be married, and my home didn't have a marriage in it, and so I really didn't quite get it. Wasn't the best husband, didn't really know how to have a friend or friendship in your home between a woman and you. So my marriage failed. And I stayed single for the longest time, never got married again. But certainly have a lady in my life now that's special.
Yeah. You was getting a lot of action, though, man. I mean, that's kind of hard, though, to, you know, like, especially if you're not ready. If you say, I'm not ready, and you got women coming at you from all angles, don't really too much matter what you have at home if those women are coming at you like that. That's kind of hard to resist.
Well, I didn't really look at it that way. That happened. But I didn't have the institution of marriage under the roof I lived in. My parents argued all the time. They finally got divorced. I was 6 years old, and I remember the day when I was six. And so, you know, so I didn't have a pattern. I didn't have the environment.
He didn't have a blueprint. He didn't know it,
you know, and I've dated a couple of girls that had wonderful parenting and parents that I dated a girl for a few years, and her parents were together for 20 some years, and they were still girlfriend and boyfriend in their 60s. And it was wonderful to see it, wonderful that, you know, to be in a relationship when you could see that the parents had created an environment that the girl was going to make, no matter who she married, she was going to make a good wife because she lived in that environment.
Yeah. Okay. I don't recall any stories of any wild stories of women coming for you. You know, like we live in the middle. We live in this Me Too era where guys get caught up all the time. Athletes and rappers, they're getting caught up all the time with these women coming after them for money and babies, and they got babies and they want the money. They're trying to get to the money. Have you ever had a situation like that before?
Yes, I have.
Yeah?
You know, I had a child out of wedlock, and it's probably the greatest thing that's ever happened to me. And the girl that I had the child with hired Gloria Allred, who was known to this day. Yeah. And that was my daughter's 31 years old. Gloria Allred was around back when she was 4 or 5 years old. And so, you know, I went through it. I got through it.
Mm-hmm.
I got a wonderful daughter out of it. And I'm blessed and grateful that I have a spectacular child that's given me a couple grandchildren. She's given me one that's a little over two years old, and she's 7 months pregnant now and due in August, and I'll have another grandson. And so I'm grateful for the gift.
Yeah, yeah. That's beautiful.
I went through a lot of trouble with it, you know, economically, but, you know, I'm good to go with it.
Just money at the end of the day. Those kids, you know, do y'all like go out and do fun things and all, you know, get the kids?
I do fun things with my daughter. The grandchildren are a little bit young. You know, my grandchild, you know, I've been around him quite a bit, watched him a little bit, but, you know, he's at an age when I first saw him the first day he was born. I was the first outsider to see him.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, he's less than two and a half years old. He's still mommy's boy.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. You and Brad, y'all have had a number of conversations, right? I just wanted to know, like, how does a guy like you, befriend a guy
like you?
How does a guy like you befriend a guy like this? I mean, you know, like, he's just
him.
Yeah, he's incorrigible.
No answer. I am curious to know, Mr. Jackson. Like, at the end of the day, what would you want it to read up under your name in those lights? Hmm. What would you want to be said about you?
I would want it to be said that Mr. Jackson was a great teammate in life.
Huh.
Was a person you could count on, was always there for you, that thought of his friends and family and people that he could help at least as much of he thought as least as much as he thought of himself. willing to help his friends and give to his friends with everything that he owned or had. Honest and honorable. He's a man with a good heart and a person you can count on.
Ain't no doubt about it. I already knew this. I just wanted the rest of the world to know.
Yeah.
You are working with the Astros these days.
Yes.
I see you and Mr. Crane together all the time. Tell me about Mr. Crane. Is he cool as I think he is?
Jim Crane is a man that's on a wonderful mission.
I agree.
You know, his level of intelligence, he's brilliant. Has tremendous comprehension of his surroundings, in his environment, the environment he participates in. He has great understanding of it and does translate his success. And you would use the term his wealth. And his wealth is beyond the economics of it, but he has a wealth of knowledge of people.
Yeah.
And has an ability to create solutions for the problems that he can make a difference in. And I find those differences that he wants to make a change in is leveling the playing field of diversity.
There you go.
He does feel for the person that can't help themselves. And I think he's committed to it. I think he's accepts the burden that has been put on his shoulders to make change for the underserved, to make the playing field, the path, to carve one that has the signs of success written every mile or two.
I wanted the world to hear that. That's how I feel about the gentleman.
Yeah, he's always
there trying to make sure that somebody else is.
He's concerned about others.
Yeah, big time.
And if you see him walk around and walk through life, he'll reach down and pick up a piece of trash that's in the stadium that's clutter.
He does that on the tee box too.
Yes. Yes, pick up a broken tee.
Pick up the broken tee. You don't want to.
he does want to make a difference for the better. Gets dumbfounded when people can't understand. Just doing it the right way. Just do what's right. I believe that my three R's of success. In the business world is the residual of doing the right thing is revenue. Don't worry about margin. Don't worry about how much you're going to get. If you do it right, people aren't concerned about what they pay. People want you to do them right and then they'll pay you.
Are there any parallels, between George Steinbrenner and
Jim Crane
that you see as far as the way that they operate their teams?
They both have a penchant for excellence. George thought that we should be perfect as a team. He thought since he had the highest payroll with his team,
y'all should win every game.
That we should be 162-0.
Yeah,
he couldn't understand how you know you could just you're better than that guy. So why can't you hit a home run off him when you want to or when you need to? You had three chances today.
Yeah,
you know you're better than he is. Why didn't you win?
Right.
and I see I see some similarities with the demand for excellence and the demand to be the best you possibly can be. Jim has a penchant for being a champion. He has a penchant for being first, for being a leader.
Hmm.
Mostly because he has the capability to understand it, plan it, and do it.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's disappointed if he doesn't, because he knows he has the ability to be number one, you know, mm-hmm. to be first. And so he's disappointed when he's not. You know, we were there last year at a World Series and we were losing to Atlanta in the sixth game. And he says, damn it, I just can't wait till it's over. It's terrible being here like this. I said, well, there's 30 other teams at home that would love to be in your spot.
Mm.
And he kind of looked at me and said, well, I guess you're right. But, you know, he wanted to win. And for that, you admire him. And he starts over that day that we lose. He started over again trying to build a winner and build a champion to get back to the World Series in 2022. We have a chance.
Big time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was one of my questions. I wanted to know, like, what do you think our chances were this year?
We're not the best team yet. We're in first place by 8 or 9 games. And we're 14 or 15 games over 500. Something like that. And we haven't hit yet. We can be better. Mm-hmm. We haven't played. We've played pretty good defensively. We need to get better defensively. And we haven't hit well at all. I'll bet you we're in below middle of the pack offensively.
Okay.
That'd be interesting.
That's a lot of room.
Kyle, look that up, buddy.
So what do we have to do to get better?
Your players have to hit.
Okay. So you're saying we have the personnel?
We have the skills. We have the skill positions. You know, we have the players to be able to make us one of the top teams offensively in the league. And they've been that in the last few years. They strike out less. They're on base higher and higher percentage. We put the ball in play more often than anybody else. We haven't done that this year. We're still in first place. We're not in a good division. You know, I think we're the only team in the division playing over 500. And I'm not really paying attention to a lot of that now, because you're 60 games out. You're 62 out. You got 100 to play. Everybody's going to win 50 and everyone's going to lose 50. It's what you do with the other 62.
Huh.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I win 40 of those.
Yeah.
You're going to lose 50. You're going to win 50. The other 42, you win those. And the other 62, you want to win 40, 42 of them, and then you win 92 games, and you're in postseason somewhere.
Yeah. Out of the four teams that you played for in your professional 21 years, which team did you enjoy playing for the most?
The A's. I can answer that. No, seriously.
Amen.
No, yeah. For real?
Yes.
And why is that?
I was there longer. I was groomed and born with those guys. 18, and I started in baseball at 19. I was in the big leagues at 20.
Damn.
And I played with Rudy and Bando and Raleigh Fingers and Vida Blue and Catfish Hunter and all those guys.
Mike Schmidt, Pete Rose. You played with all them
guys. Bert Campanaris.
Well, speaking of Pete Rose, what do you think about this, him being denied the opportunity to be in the Hall of Fame?
Pete made his own bed more than once.
So I wanna,
but okay. Pete Rose is a Hall of Famer and should be in the Hall of Fame.
Hmm.
There are murderers, racists, all that in the Hall of Fame.
Damn.
And so Pete Rose gambled. He took him forever to admit it.
But did he fix any games?
No.
He didn't fix the game. He just bet on it, right?
That's right. He should be in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, I mean, that's like, well, That's like me and Willie betting.
Betting on yourself.
Bet on himself, right? Or he bet on another game?
He bet on himself.
But it don't matter, though, right?
He bet on himself.
Oh, man.
The trip part about it is that I bet you that some of the people that punished him also bet.
Hell yeah, they have betting right now.
Yeah. You know, you have betting now in the stadiums in some places. They have betting in the stadium in Arizona.
Betting on baseball.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Stop.
In the stadium.
But see, Pete has passed his eligibility now.
What does that mean?
Like he's outside, right?
No, he's not. They can bring him back.
They can? Because I thought after a certain amount of years, you're no longer eligible.
DraftKings is owned partially by Major League Baseball.
Wow.
Did you hear that?
Ain't that something?
Yeah, but you can't bet on baseball.
Ain't that something?
Yeah, football too.
That's cold.
You can't bet on football either?
Not as a player.
Okay.
But they own part of the gambling businesses, gambling companies. They're partners with them.
Using the grade system of A to F, what do you think Major League Baseball is in terms of racial diversity?
F. Really?
Is that the worst?
That's the F. That's the worst.
That would be the worst.
Really?
Yeah, we're the worst.
Why is it so hard for Major League Baseball, you know, to show a little equality?
They don't have a real focus on change. They don't. Leadership doesn't have a real focus on change.
Well, leadership starts at the top, so we start with the commissioner, right?
We start at the commissioner's office, and then the other leaders of the most powerful teams.
The owners.
I can say that our team has the highest percentage of minorities working in its organization. We have 400 employees, which would mean we have more than 20% or more of our workforce is minority. Women, LGBTQ, African-American, Latin-American, Amerasian.
Is that management positions?
That is throughout the entire organization.
Yeah.
Management position from the owner on down to, you know, whomever is employed there.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yeah. I want to be politically correct by not naming a position that you say from the owner to
the janitor.
Yeah. So you want to be politically correct and say from in all of our employment.
Well, I would be curious to know how much of that percentage is
African American.
Well, is specifically black and in management.
Large.
I want to say that
I know for a fact.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a lot.
Yeah. He wants our team to look like the city of Houston. And I understand the city of Houston is 16% to 18% African American.
Yeah, we may be higher than that. I mean, I think they're underreporting.
I think
we're
30%. I think Houston is 38% minority.
More than that?
Google it.
It's got to be.
Willie, you the master of Google.
It's got to be more than that.
No, Kyle.
But you know what? I don't trust their numbers though, so I'm not going to even Google it because they be lying. We've been stuck at 13% in this country for the last 30 years. You know, like they keep on saying black people represent 13% of the population. Country.
Right, 13%. We're around 16%. Yeah. And between us and Latin American Latinx, it's around 33% to 35% of the population. A third is Latinx and African American.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think that counts indigenous.
Let's go to draft day, 1966. And the New York Mets choose. What were you thinking when they picked over you for that number one spot?
I had a meeting with our coach of the baseball team, Bobby Winkles, who was from Arkansas, and I was the first African American ever have on the Arizona State baseball team, the number one baseball school in the country. And he called me and he said, Reggie, the draft's going to come up in a month or so. And he said, the New York Mets are not going to draft you.
Damn.
While you're head and shoulders above any other player in the country, they're not going to draft you because they think you'll have social issues because you're dating a Mexican-American. And I said, well, my middle name is Martinez, which comes from Latin America, comes from grandmother being Puerto Rican. What's the issue? He said, well, they think you're dating outside your race. I said, well, tell them my middle name. It didn't matter. The Mets did not draft me because I was dating what they considered out of my race by dating a Mexican American.
Did she look white? Did she have white features?
She might have had white features in her nose and lips and mouth, but her skin was like mine.
Okay.
Her skin was color of mine.
Right.
You know?
New York Mets, you are some lousy. Y'all just lousy. Damn, y'all lousy, man.
That's just terrible.
Horrible. Just, man.
Because he was going to have some issues, some social issues because of who he was dating.
Yes.
Dating, not who he was married to, not who he had to drag to New York with him. Somebody he was dating.
Man. First of all, ain't none of their damn business. That's number one. You know, she unless she's some serial killer or some international terrorist, you know,
on the list.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying? That should not have mattered at all. That should not have mattered at all.
She was a killer, all right, because she was that fine.
Yeah. Man, I just think just hanging out with you for the past couple of months. You and Mr. Baker, Mr. 2000 man himself. Like, I'm just learning a lot. And I appreciate that. There's a lot of wisdom in the conversations that we have.
Mm-hmm.
And I just sit there and I just listen, man. Because it ain't nothing else you could do but just sit there and listen.
Well, you know, in dealing with you, Scar.
Oh.
Your vantage point from whence you have come. You get me really quickly. You get Dusty of him being able to say things to you or look at you, in with the conversation going on. You're easy to communicate with because you've lived what I've lived. You have experienced it. I'm the head of diversity for several companies I'm involved with. I'm probably the top guy here with the Astros for diversity. I'm an expert. I've lived all the answers.
Mm.
There isn't too much you can ask me. I don't know what the reaction is going to be or what it should be. You can go into a room and feel someone that's got issues with minorities. You can feel them. You know someone's in the room.
Why do you think people have so much animosity? Why do you have an issue with a minority? Why?
It's an insecurity. You're insecure that person is going to be treated as well as you are. And it's a tragedy.
What does that matter, though? How
it's who some people are because of their insecurity, because their ignorance, because of their lack of understanding of life, because of the God that's in heaven, what He's put in their heart. You're going against that. To root against or pull against or believe that you're better than someone else is a sickness.
That is a sickness. Who would want to stand over a man? What type of man would want to stand over another man? I want to be your God.
An uncivilized mutt.
I'm trying to
I just don't.
It's a very insecure person that's has a psychological or a mental issue. You know, the word that keeps coming to me, they're just so insecure about themselves that they want to make themselves or talk to you as though they're better than you. And that's pure ignorance. Pure ignorance, as pure as it can possibly be, by thinking that you're better than someone that bleeds red blood.
Come on.
When I look across the room and see this young man here, his heart's pure. He has no negative thoughts in his mind.
Come on.
And so for me to think that he's, because of his color, he's less than me, with the purity of his heart and mind, how sick do I have to be to have that thought? Where's my head have to be or have been? How ignorant am I? What a fool am I? I'm in a breach with God. You're troubled. I got to be troubled to think that. To not think of him as a pure person that's unimpacted with what is told by his parents or what he hears. It's all so pure what he gets. Help him.
Mm.
Keep the wind be beneath his wings. Why would you want to pull that down?
It's heavy.
Why would you want to say something negative to a child of God? They're up to 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Like, really? You know, I was in my shop. I have a car shop and General Motors and all the big companies come to California. I'm connected with some car dealers and they want to, Reggie, would you entertain our people that are coming in town? Can they come by your shop and you make time? I said, sure. I've had probably 7 or 8 visits like that from manufacturers. And they come by my place and I have a newspaper article from Charleston, South Carolina with the sale of slaves hanging in my shop. And people say, well, what do you have that for? I said, I haven't forgot. I want you to know I didn't forget. On my office door, there's a plaque made out of metal that I bought in Charleston, South Carolina. And it says, no colored. Man, why you got that on your door? I don't want to forget. And so I've had people there. It was a manufacturer that came through my place. I won't mention it. I'm still connected with him. And the guy asked me, there was a gentleman there, and he said, Reggie, why do you have the sale of colored for slaves? And I said, I want to remember the term colored. I said, I'd been Negro, color, nigger, African-American, black, multicultural.
Negroid.
I've been all those things. I want to remember that.
Damn it.
And I said, there was a children there and grandchildren, and there was a child there that was 10. And I said, have you ever heard the term colored before? And she said, oh, yes, Mr. Jackson, I sure have.
Are you serious?
And I said to the parents, I said, that breaks my heart. This was about 10 years ago. I said, that breaks my heart because I didn't think my daughter, who is 12 now or 15, would have to go through that. But I see that she's 12 and she's 10 years in because she's 10 and she's heard the term. She heard it at home or in school in her environment. She didn't make it up.
Wow.
I said, so that's painful to me. And man, everybody got quiet for 3 or 4 minutes. It wasn't an uncomfortable quiet for me, but it was for a lot of other people that were there.
See, I call BS on hating a person based on their skin color, and this is why. Our strongest convictions that we have in life comes from people who look like us in most cases. If you were abused as a child, you were probably abused by somebody who looks like you. If you had a friend who betrayed you, it was probably somebody who looked like you. If you got chased home from school, it was probably somebody who looked like you. You got passed over for the promotion, it's probably somebody that looked like you, if you're white. if there's a situation where a person cheated on you, that person probably somebody that looked like you. So these things are really what helps develop our character. It makes us who we are. But then you decide, well, I'm not going to hate all those people that did all that shit to me personally. I'm not going to hate somebody them. Is. I'm going to hate them because I don't like what they look like. See, that's why I call BS. This is just, and so these are just excuses that people use to justify bad behavior. That's all it is. It's just people that, you know, like it's like Reggie was saying, like these are people who are just, that have a low
self-esteem.
They have low self-esteem and they have a low standard for themselves. They just don't like themselves. It's just like the guy who went out and did the shooting in Buffalo. He called himself a white supremacist. No, you're not a white supremacist. You're a white inferioritist. That's what you are. Because if I feel superior over someone, why would I throw my life away for somebody? As much as I hate you, I'm not finna go kill you and kill you and kill you and kill you and then go spend the rest of my days in jail. I'm superior. Why am I throwing my life away for you?
Why am I even thinking about you?
I'm not even thinking about you because I'm superior. See? So they're not superior. They don't even believe that they're superior. They use the white supremacy thing so that they can get paid after they go do some dumb shit, or so they can be honored in some type of way by the sick bastards out there who think like them. There's no way possible that if I consider myself a supremacist, what I throw my life away over people who I think are lower than me.
Damn.
This is a guy who gave up on life. He couldn't hack it. He gave up on life. His sorry ass didn't want to get up and go do what billions of people do every day. Get up, go to work, get up, go to school, study, whatever you got to do. He didn't want to do it. He wasn't good with girls. He was socially awkward. No friends. And so he's feeling down and done with life. So let me just go out with a bang and go after them. You dig what I'm saying? That's what that's about, man. Low self-esteem, that's all it is. And it's the people who think very low of themselves. You got to think low of yourself to go out. Just like a guy who would be a simp that go out and harm a woman because the woman rejected him, right? This is a guy. Why would you throw your life away? Okay, she stepped out on you. She's nothing. She's all these names you're calling her. So why are you sitting in jail?
Mm-hmm.
Why did you put a gun to your head and kill yourself for somebody who was all of these derogatory words that you just called her? Why? That is because you can't hack it. You feel low. You have low self-esteem. You feel worthless. And the only way that you know how to make yourself feel some type of relief, just for a moment, is to harm somebody else.
I get it.
That's where we are. And so I can just, man, I can just imagine some of the things I can't even imagine because some of the things that I keep hearing about what happened back in the slave days. And I'm going like, wow, man, that is crazy.
I have a calendar in the back of my truck right now and it's a year calendar, but on
every day of the year is going to say something that happened to black people. I want to go grab that and I want to see what happened, you know, in the month of June. Just read off some stuff that happened.
That was Juneteenth.
I'm going to go and pull it up and we're going to see what happened on Juneteenth. Like it'll be like on July 7th, 1865, 15 people were hung. And like it'll tell you what happened on that day on this calendar, man. I think we should keep that in here and bring that up on every one of our podcasts so people can know what happened on this day.
Interesting.
In fact, I'm going to go grab it while you and Mr. Jackson talk a little bit.
Ghetto Boys Reloaded Podcast. We'll be right back after the break.
AT&T Connects and Ode to Podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower. Lather up with the news, sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work in traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories. Change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
This is Amy Brown from 4 Things with Amy Brown. Today, healthier is happening at CVS Health in more ways than you've ever seen. It's wellness destinations for seniors, including select locations with Oak Street Health and CVS Pharmacy. It's doctors, nurses, pharmacists, and everyone in between offering quality care and support virtually, in person, and on the phone. It's in-home evaluations through Signify Health and meeting mental health needs through Aetna. And those are just a few of the ways that healthier is happening. To see more, visit cvshealth.com/healthierhappenstogether. CVS Pharmacy, Oak Street Health, CVS Specialty, Signify Health, and Aetna are part of CVS Health. Eligibility and services vary by location and individual.
LASIK, LASIK.com.
Have a ton of questions about LASIK? You're not alone. That's why we created LASIK.com, one place where you can go to find every answer to every question on your mind. Like, how much does LASIK cost? How long does recovery take? How do I find a doctor? If you've been thinking about LASIK, go to LASIK.com now. Yeah, LASIK.com. Easy to remember, so you know where to start.
LASIK, LASIK.com.
Let me ask you something. I see you sitting here eating this salad, and you know, that's one of my favorite pastimes is to sit around and eat salads. But how cognizant of you of your health these days, just in terms of, you know, keeping yourself fit and eating the right kind of foods? Is this something you do all the time? Like you eat salads all the time?
I try to eat for my health. I focus on superfoods, whether it be broccoli or spinach, or whether it be kale or a sweet potato, those types of things, avocado, the dark greens, if you will, the different fruits and nuts that are healthy for you, the berries that are blueberries, blackberries, raspberries, strawberries, those that help you with antioxidants, those that give you energy, those that have cures for pain, if you will. And there's so many of the fruits that we can take and include as part of our diet that help us with our health, be it diabetes, be it rheumatoidism, be it the different pains and joint pain that you get as you continue to grow old, arthritis, et cetera. There are foods that you can eat to help you get better and stay healthy. I'm reading a book about health and about food and intake. And I'm of the belief that God has put an awful lot of cures on earth between nuts and fruits and the vegetables and things like that, that you can eat to keep yourself healthy.
Mm-hmm. You made a career you know, making your body work for you, you know, using your body with athletics and I'm just wondering, like, I've always been an athletic guy myself. I never played a pro sports or anything like that. Well, I had a few pro fights, but my being healthy and using my body and my and having, you know, speed and agility has always been, and being in strength has always been important to me. But at, you know, get the older you get, of course, you start losing some of those things. So
you had speed and agility,
huh?
You had speed and agility. I don't believe that.
Get in range of the left hook. Come a little closer. So, my question to you is like, when do you like, you're 20 years older than me. So when you look back at that 56, when you were 56 and where you are right now, how much has changed about your body?
I've lost a lot of muscle density, in my body. You know, I do have some arthritis in my body, you know, which is a change. I developed arthritis about 8-9 years ago, and I'm 76, which is late to develop those kind of things. Miraculously, I still see 20/20 without glasses. Hmm. I use glasses to help my vision at night. But I can read without, I can read the calendar without glasses.
Mm-hmm.
You know, with that small print there. The muscle density goes away. Your strength goes away. Your balance and equilibrium goes away. You know, so you're, meaning your stability.
Mm-hmm.
So
you have to be intentional when you're walking.
Well, you know, I won't say intentional, but you need to pay more attention. I want to say there's the greatest percentage of death with elderly people over 70 is a fall.
Mm-hmm.
And you hit your head somewhere. So being careful of where you place your feet from time to time, watch what you do when going up and down stairs, running up and down stairs. When you get to be older, you don't have the spring that your feet have recognized between the stairs. You can be a bit short. You'll stumble with things like that, which is part of growing old. So just pay attention.
Right.
Pay attention. Learn how to eat. Do some kind of exercise. I like to walk 2 to 3 miles, 3-4 days a week. I like to go to the gym as many as 4 to 5 days a week. Even if you go in the gym for 30, 40 minutes, you can get a workout in 40 minutes, easy.
Do you like it, or do you just do it because you know you need to do it?
I like the results. I'd rather not go.
Okay.
But I like the results of what happens with me. I still walk straight up. I don't slump or hunch. And that's from weights and things like that. I lift weights in the shower every morning. 5-pound weight for my shoulders. Because my shoulders are arthritic.
Mm-hmm. Arthritic. Mm-hmm.
But if you keep them just a little 5-pound weight, it'll keep your skin tight, keep your muscles toned. And as you develop the muscles around the arthritic joint, it will help you with the bone-on-bone action that you have when they're arthritic.
Mm-hmm.
It lessens the pain in your body with arthritis. If you're strengthening the muscles around the joints where the arthritis is, which means in your hands, your shoulders, your knees, and hips.
Yeah. 5 pounds.
5-pound weight.
Five pound weights. Get on it, Brad.
Yeah.
I'm thinking, Willie. Get on it.
You can get a 3-pound weight, a 5-pound weight. There's a you can gravitate
in the shower.
Gravitate to
in
eight,
the shower.
Gravitate to I'm not eight,
lifting
10.
Weights. You don't think that's dangerous lifting weights in the shower?
Not really.
I want to get too hot. I black out and hit myself in the head with a weight and be knocked out even longer with my luck, man. I'm just bad luck, bro.
I asked you earlier, you know, what team you preferred playing for, you know, which team you had the most fun.
I enjoyed the A's.
Yeah, you enjoyed the A's, right?
I enjoyed the A's.
But what city, you lived in a lot of places, what city have you enjoyed the most living in?
Well, I would say that I really did enjoy New York. Love the intensity, love the action, love the quickness and the speed of the city, the pulse of the city, their appreciation for their idols and heroes, of which I became one, you know, by playing there, like Joe Namath, Willis Reed, Lawrence Taylor, Mickey Mantle, Joe D, Jeter, you know, all those guys that have been very successful there and been honored, Mariano Rivera. Oakland is always and will always be a very special place for me. I still own a home there. You know, I always appreciated the fact that they had a significant minority population there. And I enjoyed being successful there because my people had a great appreciation for my success. They shared it. I feel like they shared it with me, or I shared it with them. And still to this day, when I go back, they had a 50-year reunion with the World Series team of 72. And we'll do that the next 2 years. We have a 50-year reunion in 73 and a 50-year reunion in 74 because we won 3 years in a row. So Gene Tennis, who was the most valuable player of the World Series in 72, he had 4 home runs. He threw out the first pitch and he walked up in front of the mound. And I was standing next to Raleigh Fingers and he said, "Now, what this is telling me is they're having the MVP throw out the first pitch. So a year from now, you're going to throw it out." And he said, "2 years from now, it's going to be my turn." He says, "I hope the hell I can do it when I'm 77.
So at 76, 77, 78, 79, 80, do you see yourself still, you know, working with the Astros or working in some capacity with Major League Baseball?
I'll be working with Major League Baseball and I'll be working with the Astros if Jim Crane is here.
Yeah.
Because he's a special friend and a special guy. And I think he gets success, and I think we have a friendship that is long-lasting and special.
Yeah.
We can all take a page out of his playbook, you know, mm-hmm. great to be a great human being. Like,
yes, yes.
We should all take a page out of his playbook.
He shares the wealth. Man.
I've seen
it. He's fair.
Very, very.
Generous.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, let's see what happened today. In this month. I just pick a day.
June the 15th? Is it the 15th or 14th?
Whatever. What's the date?
Today's the 14th.
Today's the 14th. 1973. Two young black girls, 14-year-old Minnie and 12-year-old Mary Alice Ralph, are sterilized at a health clinic in Montgomery, Alabama, without their knowledge of consent.
Here's why black people to this day fear going to the doctor, because we've been used as guinea pigs throughout the years.
Sterile. What happened on Juneteenth?
June 18th?
No, 19th.
Months after the Emancipation Proclamation is signed, enslaved black people in Texas finally learn about it when Union troops arrive and tell them the Confederacy lost the Civil War.
What do you think about these politicians actively passing laws to prevent critical race theory from being taught in schools?
Define it for me.
So critical race theory is putting the information out there about slavery. They're saying they don't want you to teach like the true history of America, like the stuff that really happened during slavery and even post-slavery, Jim Crow and all. They don't want that taught in schools because they say it makes white children feel bad.
And it's a law in Florida right now that's saying that you can't make a certain group of people feel bad for you know the pain that they inflicted on another group of people. For sure.
I 100% disagree with it because I want young African Americans to know what all African Americans went through and why your folks, when I say folks, I mean the generations before you, the younger generation needs to know what you went through, what you think about in quiet moments, why you may snap at someone, or why someone may say, young fella, you'll learn one day, you'll have an understanding. It's part of the history of the country. It needs to be learned. And I would like, whether they teach it or not in school, I think it should be taught in school because it's what the history of the country is. We as parents should, at the dinner table, in the life of that young person, be told what happened, what his parents and his grandparents and his great-greats went through. It's pretty simple. This gentleman is 13. How old are you, son? 14. So his mom, let's give her 20 years. Let's give her 34. Her parents are in their 50s or 60s. Their parents are in their 90s. Okay, so 90 years ago, it's 1930. Bitter, bitter racism. Then that's great parent, great grandparents. Your great greats are in the 1890s. That's about as harsh and as bitter as it could be for a black person, with castrations when you did something wrong, with the
well, when they accuse you of doing something wrong,
with the passing of your children and grandchildren at the age of 12 to 15, 18 years old, to go to the house and be slept with and raped by the owner of the house or the owner of the slaves, getting caught when you tried to break away and being brought back to the plantation and have everyone come outside and watch as they took four horses and tied it to your two arms and your two legs and ripped you apart in front of everyone. That needs to be remembered and recognized as to what happened, as to why you are who you are today, because of the things that were inflicted and the experiences that your folks and your family and your bloodline went through. Why that your grandparents, or why some of the athletes in my era had the determination and the drive to be successful, that they were fighting for dignity or for a sandwich to eat or heat in the house, that your striving for success was life or death.
Damn.
Yeah. Any regrets?
I probably wish I would have had four or five children. because I had the capability of raising them in a good environment and getting them good educations and being positive impact to the community. And I would have enjoyed, selfishly, I would have enjoyed it.
Yeah. Well, man, this has been a spirited discussion. We really do appreciate you imparting your wisdom. I tell you, like, as much as I've admired you on the field, off the field, even more.
Yeah.
You know, I think there's a... I sense a commitment in Brad Scar.
You can call me Brad, man. I don't even like Scar no more. He wore that out so bad on stage until I don't ever want to be Scar again.
Call him DJ Action.
Jackson.
No, DJ Action.
DJ Action. He used to be a DJ.
Yeah, I'm done.
I really do think that what you're doing or you're trying to do is enormously important to pass on from, be it Dr. J or Reggie or Michael Jordan or Jeter or Franco Harris and the guys that broke the barriers and lived the difficulty. They have stories to tell. And, you know, Bill Russell, who's about 90 now, he's going to take it with him, and he hasn't been heard by the youth of today. And young people need to hear what we experienced and what we lived with and what drove us and why you need to keep the bloodline going and keep the success and the drive. And what gives you the impetus to be successful, and what you need to prove still, you're still less than, you're still not equal. Your community is still being impacted, pushed aside and beat down. And you need to hear that and recognize that you got a chance to make it. And when you make it, give back to your community, share, tell the stories, tell the things that gave you the drive and made you keep going. Talk about the things that are important. Talk about continuity and support for family. Talk about support for your community. And going to a grocery store and running into another colored person, black person, Negro, minority, nod to them. Acknowledge that you're part of their fraternity. Don't ignore. Don't turn the other way. Look at the person and let them see you and nod. In a how are you kind of nod. I see you. I'm here with you. Good to see you, with a nod. That we need to promote that, teach that. It needs to permeate our community. We need to be together. And not only blacks, but whites too. And Latinx and Amerasian and the indigenous, the American Indian. American Indian has been abused just as much as we have. You take a look at the Jews. I've always had an affinity for Jews. They've been beat down and murdered for no reason at all. None. Same as us. 6 million Jews were murdered, and it's either 18 million or 30 million African Americans. And how many of the indigenous, how many of the Indians? The Indians were here first. This ain't your land. This ain't your land. You know, of all the Indians that lived in the southeastern part of the country in Florida, and all the names of the towns that are Indian names, they went and gathered all those people and made them walk through the tears of the trail of tears.
Damn.
And walked to across the Mississippi. No food, nothing. The trail of tears. It's not quite exactly that, but Google it. It's a horrible story of what they did to the Indian in this country. And how they've given them money, reparations, and then the worst land in the country to live on. Trail of tears.
Willie gonna have it.
Did you find it?
Trail of tears.
Kyle, did you find it?
It was approximately 60,000 American Indians.
There you go. Did you find it?
I did.
What's it say?
It says a lot.
What's the title?
Trail of Tears.
There you go.
Trail of Tears. A series of forced displacements. Approximately 60,000 American Indians. Wow.
Made them walk.
Sure did.
Yeah.
It sure did.
Man, I don't even know about that. The people.
It's always a mind-blowing conversation with you, man. Yeah. I'm going to go ahead and let you finish your salad now. But fantastic, man. Absolutely fantastic.
I roomed with a guy by the name of Brady Walker in college.
Hello.
I got a note from a guy the other day on one of the social mediums that said, so-and-so went to college with you, and he's really sick. He passed away, and he's going to be honored. And he was your roommate in college. And I was sitting with a few guys, and I said, let me tell you about this story. When I went to college, there were no colored that roomed with whites.
Say that again.
When I went to college, there were no colored rooming with whites. I couldn't room with a white guy. You could. How you going to room with me? It was 64. They allowed Negroes to vote in 1965. I remember that.
Damn.
You couldn't. I didn't say nothing. I just kind of chuckled to myself where somebody was wanting me to come or say something or pick up in video. Reggie, your college roommate died. Well, he told that story. Well, he didn't tell it to a colored person because somebody would have said, when was that? 1964. Really? He ain't room with Reggie, bro. No, we're no white boy. Won't be rooming with him. It wasn't allowed. I was the first guy to have a white roommate in baseball. Guy's name was Joe Rudy. 1968. That was big news. Really? That was big news. So I didn't know what to say to the guy. Man, you.
Did you respond?
No.
You should.
I say, come up like Muhammad Ali. Muhammad said, we were talking and he said, he saw a picture of the Last Supper. He said, Mama, I don't see no colored angels sitting up there. I know there was colored angels, wasn't it? Where's all the color that this is the Last Supper? Are they in the kitchen fixing the biscuits and the honey? I have to tell that story every once in a while to bring some levity to the horror.
Boy, some levity to the horror.
Yeah, it Brady Walker was my roommate in college.
That's the one that's sick and died.
He was 6'4".
About
220. No. Mm-mm.
So somebody lying.
This, Brady was colored. Brady was a brother. Okay. From Mississippi.
Okay.
You know, and he had a stutter, super guy. His family would send him cornbread and biscuits, you know, out cookies to our dorm. And when we slept in the room, the room wasn't no bigger than this. Right here. But it was plenty good for, you know, him and me. You know, each guy had 4 or 5 pairs of pants, 1 pair of dress shoes, 1 pair of sneakers, 4 or 5 pairs of socks, 5 or 6 pair of underwear, a couple t-shirts, and then you wore your football t-shirt around, and that was always your clothes, you know. You went to school and you came home, took your clothes off and hung them up. Yeah. And we used to get in conversations. The white guys lived in the same dorm, and they would laugh at Brady because he stammered. Super sweet guy. And
stammered.
Yeah. And I used to. So he was stammering one day, and they were laughing. And I said, "You know something, Joe and Jeff. One of these days, Brady is going to get pissed off because you're laughing at him. He's going to jump on you, and he's going to beat your ass for all those kids in Mississippi when he was 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, I'm calling him a nigger. He's going to jump on you and beat your ass, and I ain't going to do nothing about it. I'm going to, then after he beats your ass, I'm going to drive you to the hospital." he just looked at me like that, and they got quiet. We went back in the room, and Brady, like I say, he lay down his feet, be over the end of the bed. "Reggie, I can't wait to call my mama and tell them what you said. You talk to them white boys like you ain't got no problem. You ain't scared of nothing. I love to see you talk to them. And you want to know something? You gonna be right one of these days if I ever get mad."
There you go.
When you was playing and you know, when you got that name, Mr. October, did you ever feel any pressure to actually, like, I know it's the postseason and everything, and you got the name because of your ability to perform under pressure, but and in the clutch. But did you ever feel any pressure, any additional pressure in the postseason because you had that title, Mr. October?
Not really.
No.
I guess if you look at Steph Curry or Jordan or any of those guys, Magic Johnson, Kobe, Kareem, the greats, I really felt like when the postseason got close, I got better. And so I kind of relied on it. I relied on living up to the stories, the Paul Bunyan stories or the stories of what I was going to do. I kind of said, well, getting close to October, I'm going to be doing my thing pretty quick. Huh. You better be careful.
Right.
I'm come out with a cape on. But I kind of got to the point to where I believed it, and it gave me a confidence.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nice. Well, thank you again, man. We really do appreciate
it. My pleasure.
Taking time out to talk to us.
This episode was produced by A-King and brought to you by
the Black Effect Podcast Network and iHeartRadio.
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles ready for next day installation and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit rightrug.com. That's RITERUG.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
This is the story of how a group of people brought music back to Afghanistan by creating their own version of American Idol. The joy they brought to the nation.
You're free completely. No one is there to destroy you.
The danger they endured.
They said my head should be cut off.
I'm John Legend. Listen to Afghan Star on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.